Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today was a high-powered New York communications strategist when an ancestry test suggested she shared significant DNA with the Sami people, the indigenous people of the Arctic tundra across Europe and Asia. With that knowledge, Laura Galloway began taking trips to northern Norway, well above the Arctic Circle, learning slowly about the culture. After meeting a Sami reindeer herder, she ultimately decided to move to the Sami community of Kautokeino, Norway. When that boyfriend left her after 6 months, it would have been easy to pack up and come back to New York, but Galloway decided to stay, living on her own, in a harsh environment with months of darkness in the winter, months of light in the summer, learn a language, as well as a nomadic culture alien to Western norms. She ended up staying 6 years, and with that time, a much slower time than her high-powered life before, she began to reconcile her earlier life and unresolved traumas for her childhood. She writes about those events, as well as her intense learning curve and experience, devotion to the people and the landscapes of the far northern latitudes. Her book, Dalvi, 6 Years in the Arctic Tundra, describes those adventures. Dalvi is the Sami word for the dark of winter, the time when Galloway first moved to this harsh climb. Laura Galloway is our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Laura Galloway, thank you very much for joining us here on Studio Tulsa.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Yeah, your sojourn to northern Norway among the indigenous people of northern Scandinavia, the Sami, all began with a DNA test. What happened?
Well, I took a commercial DNA test. I won't say the company because I don't think it's totally relevant, but I very early stage DNA test about 10 years ago or so, and the test had suggested that I shared some very distant DNA with the Sami people, who you just mentioned are the indigenous of northern Scandinavia. And I was completely fascinated by that because I'd considered myself to be a well-traveled person, but I'd never heard of the Sami people. So this sparked an interest in research, and I started making trips up to the Arctic over and over again.
Now, another thing that sort of made a connection in your mind was the fact your mother, who died when you were very young, had no relatives, and she was never spoken of in your family. How did this help make a connection?
Well, my mother was an only child, and so I had my grandparents and my great uncle, but I think my father remarried a person that did not want me to ever mention my mother, and it was kind of forbidden to ask questions about her or her background. So in some distant and tangential way, I think something like a DNA test, when you're really trying to search for roots or connection to something, which is something that I really longed for, and I think that was my initial interest in the test, although as I write in the book later on that I'm not a Sami person, and these tests are based on samplings of data, and they only get better the more people that take them, but I'm not a Sami person.
Mm. Now, that must have been an interesting realization.
Yes and no. When I first moved to the Arctic, I realized very quickly that your belonging and your place is really based on people knowing you and your lived history. And so by virtue of that, you know, people don't care about distant DNA or affiliations of that manner. I think they care more about who were your parents and grandparents and what village did they come from and having a history. And so I never considered that I had finally found home or had a huge epiphany through the test.
Yes, but when you first started making trips to the north, you did feel like this immediate connection. You saw faces that resembled yours, and that must have made a very deep connection on you.
Yes, I felt very connected to that part of the world. And I would say that I feel that it was because it was such a stark juxtaposition from the life that I had been leading in New York, which was really busy. I was running communications for a lot of very big clients, and you never stopped. And then to suddenly be in a place where it was wild nature and completely pristine, it was just a very welcoming atmosphere, and I really loved it. And eventually, I ended up moving to the Arctic
right,
because on one of my visits, I was invited to a wedding in a village called Kautokeino, Norway, and I met a reindeer herder, which one does in that particular village. And we began a relationship. And as things were sort of not going smoothly in New York and I was questioning everything in my life, I decided to go to Norway for a little while. And he said, come stay with me. And so I ended up moving in with the reindeer herder. But 6 months into that trip, he left in the dead of night and I was alone. And that's when I had to decide, should I stay or should I go? And I ended up staying there on my own for 6 years.
So you made that decision to head to Kautokeino, Norway. This is above the Arctic Circle. So you're looking at periods where you have sunlight nearly 24 hours a day. And and darkness for 24-hour days in Dalvi, which is, of course, the name of the book, which is winter in the Sami language.
Yes.
You went there, obviously, and were you trying to immerse yourself? At that point, did you feel like, I have this DNA connection, I want to foster that, I want to learn about these people, I want to be a part of these people? Was that a goal, or was it more, I met somebody and I want to be with him?
I think it was actually not very much to do with the DNA, but being in the center of a culture, and I think I would feel this way anywhere that I would choose to live, is to come to start to do your best to learn everything about the culture in which you're living. And Norway is a very interesting place because many people don't recognize that there are two official languages of that country. One is Norwegian and the second is Sami. And the Sami people are going through a period now because they weren't allowed to have their own culture for so long through institutionalized policies, like Norwegian language schools and kids going to boarding schools so they wouldn't have their cultural identity. It felt really, really important to learn Sami language because I was living in a Sami village, and that was the operating language of reindeer herding. And getting to know the customs and the culture was very much something that was necessary to do living there and, you know, sort of getting by. And so I did end up studying Sami language, and I'm terrible at it, I'll tell you, Rich. It's the hardest language in the world. But I did, yeah, I did feel I had a responsibility to respect this culture and to try my best to, you know, integrate into it. And just, I think I would do that anywhere, though.
You had an immediate connection with, I believe it's Ailu, is it?
Ailu, yes.
Ailu.
Good try.
Yeah. So you had this immediate connection with Ailu, but you're immediately moving into a situation where he is very much living a nomadic existence that has probably existed in Sami culture for millennia. I mean, he's a reindeer herder. That means he follows the herds. He leaves. He goes to the herd. He comes back at some point. That must have been a very interesting way to introduce yourself into a culture with, you know, your closest ally, you know, being gone for, you know, weeks, maybe as much as a month at a time.
Yes.
And trying to learn this culture. That must have been an incredible cultural shock.
It was. It was, first of all, there aren't guidebooks for Sami reindeer herding culture. It's about 10% of all Samis are reindeer herders. There are sea Samis that traded up along the coast historically that have nothing to do with reindeer, and forest Samis. But so many of the cultural norms are just different within Sami culture. And there was no way to read this or to understand that, you know, things that were very, very different. And to give you an example of that I write about in the book is, I'm a Midwesterner. I'm from Indiana, and I don't know what it's like in Oklahoma, but when Midwesterners say goodbye, it's an 11-layer goodbye. There's heading out now, chat in the kitchen, goodbye at the door, goodbye at the driveway, another goodbye at the,
right.
You know,
watching
hug,
them leave in the car, yeah.
Totally Midwestern. But in Sami culture, you don't, because you never know when somebody is coming or going. And this is a vestige of something very ancient, of not knowing when a reindeer herder will be back, or people don't do a punctuated goodbye. And I remember with Ailu's family, one of the first times that I had spent time with them, I went around the room and hugged all the children as we were leaving after dinner. And they looked at me with, you know, complete shock and fear in their eyes, because they thought I was either going away forever or I was about to die, because you just don't make that dramatic goodbye. And so there were a lot of little things like that that I had to learn, and things like it's a visiting culture. And so, you know, I had last lived in New York, where you could go 10 years without knowing your next door neighbor in New York City, because there's not a lot of space and people want their privacy. But in Sami culture, you keep your door unlocked and you always keep coffee going, and people will just come over and sit and have coffee and sometimes stay for hours and just not talk. They're just spending time together.
That was what
this is all really new.
Yeah, that's the one thing I think would be the most difficult part is that, yes, there is that hospitality culture that, you know, you visit, but you may say hello. And you may not say much else for the next however long that person decides to be with you. It's just silence.
Right. And again, I'm a really chatty person, if you can tell. And so it's very, very hard to sit in silence. You think that there's something wrong if you're not making small talk. So I had to unlearn a lot of my Midwesternness when I was in the North.
Well, beyond those interpersonal communications, you also have to learn about just the culture of that reindeer herding society where, you know, obviously in some ways it would be really interesting, perhaps in the spring and the fall, but those winter nights have to be incredibly long. And, you know, the herd has a certain number of things that have to go on with it throughout the year. I assume it was somewhat interesting, but was it difficult to learn that sort of seasonal existence?
Well, I think there are two parts to that. One part of it was just learning about reindeer herding, which I did through my Sami language study and of course also through Ailu, the reindeer herder that I was with. And so this when the reindeer are driven in from the tundra, which happens, as you just mentioned, generally a couple times a year, this is a community event where everybody will go into, they call it going into the fence, because the reindeer are driven by the reindeer herders into these gigantic fences. And I think you can find on YouTube videos of the reindeers running in a big circle. But when you're waiting for the herders to bring in the reindeer, you're in your little tents, and you can be waiting for hours or days for them to come in. So it is a lot of waiting. And then when the reindeer are in the fence, they're brought in to be inoculated or castrated, or some are taken out, you know, for slaughter, for food. It is backbreaking, freezing cold work in the wintertime and a lot of waiting. And so learning everything around that was one gigantic learning curve for me. The second was, just as you've mentioned a couple of times, is that in the Arctic, you have such extremes of darkness and light. So, you know, I know it's hard enough when we do daylight savings in America and it gets kind of dark at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. But imagine that you're suddenly in a situation where it's in the morning, it's pitch black at 11 o'clock in the morning. And you just feel so discombobulated that, you know, you don't know what to do with yourself, really. So you have to create a real schedule for yourself so that you are, you know, you just don't completely lose your mind or eat every loaf of bread that has ever existed, because, boy, do you want to eat in that darkness.
Now, was Kaltukino at a latitude where you had a gloaming during the winter, or was it pitch black all during the winter months?
You would have complete darkness, and then the sun would rise so little before that it would seem like it was completely dark. So it was a complete shift in light. And as hard as I think 24 hours of darkness can be, which is, I think, is far more unsettling. I don't know if any of your listeners have ever seen that Al Pacino movie where he's in Alaska or something and it's light 24 hours a day. That is really mind-bending, because you can darken your windows and make a totally dark bedroom. But I didn't realize that I think when we're winding down to go to sleep, you need to have the sun to kind of help you move into sleep mode. And it was just really difficult to sleep during the summer. And then again, because people make hay while the sun shines, but the kids are out riding their bikes and on trampolines at 2 a.m. And it's just completely something to get used to.
Pretty soon, your body does adjust because you have to have sleep, but still it is very disconcerting and messes up your body clock for certain.
But the nice part of that, I will just say, is that one of the greatest parts of that was being able to decide if I wanted to go camping on my own. You know, I would just take the dogs and you could set off at midnight and feel totally fine alone on the tundra because it just never got dark.
Oh. You know, you mentioned that you settled in Norway and your boyfriend basically decided he wanted to go back to full-time reindeer herding and basically left. And you had a big decision to make. I think you'd begun taking classes and, you had sort of begun to learn the community. And you had a big decision to make whether to go home or stay. What led to you deciding to stay for, a number of years past that point?
Well, I feel like I had made such a big commitment in going there. I had traveled with my two cats from New York. I had, it was just such a huge shift. And there was something, although it was very scary to think about staying, I felt like I owed it to myself to stay there and to really get to learn about this part of the world more. And I think part of that decision was, if you're past a certain age, I think that you remember a time in the world where you didn't have the internet and phones to help guide you everywhere. And you wouldn't go to a city and know all of the same shops would be there. There will be a McDonald's, there will be a Target, there will be a this, there will be a that. So much of the world is so small now. And I found myself in a place where I had absolutely no idea of how things worked. And there was something kind of, in a strange way, that was magical about that because I had to learn everything. And I had become so jaded in modern life. And this is not to say Sammies are not modern because they have better internet than we have and, all sorts of things. But it was just this feeling that I had a lot of things to learn, and I loved that feeling. And so I decided to stay and to throw myself into the experience.
Mm. And that cultural shift of how people interrelate with one another, conception of time, is a far slower pace. It is one of those cultures where meeting at 4 o'clock is a roundabouts. Maybe that's the polite way to put it. And that sort of, I assume it's a lot about that idea of, while something interesting is happening right now, I'm going to be involved with it. And I'll get back to whatever I was supposed to do later. It's just a sort of living in the moment. Is it that way?
Yeah, I think it very much is. Because I think if you are a culture that really lives centered around nature, and I think you'll find this with most indigenous cultures, you work around nature. Nature doesn't work around you. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be prepared for anything because anything can happen. If you're a reindeer herder, the weather can shift and you have to go up and, if the reindeer eat lichen, if they can't get down to the lichen, if there's a, ice and it freezes, they have to feed the reindeer. Yeah. Or, any number of things can happen traveling from A to B or, finding someone else. And these are all things that I think come from far in the past. You live in rhythm with nature rather than nature living in rhythm with you, which is actually a very lovely way to live, I think.
My guest today is Laura Galloway. She's a writer and communication strategist who spent 6 years above the Arctic Circle in northern Norway in the small town of Kautokeino in Sami country. And her book is titled Dalvi, 6 Years in the Arctic Tundra. And Dalvi refers to six seasons, I think they referred to, or maybe 8 seasons. Dalvi is winter, right?
That's exactly right. That's the Sami word for winter. But in Sami culture, seasons are divided into 8 because you've got winter, spring, and then you've got...
Spring?
There are really 2 winters. There's the dark of night winter, which is Dalvi, and then you have a second winter, which is really when the sun starts to come out and everything looks like a, you know, like a Wrigley's chewing gum commercial with the bright, bright sun and perfect snow everywhere and people out skiing. So
your book, in addition to telling, it may be that first reindeer herding primer, but it also tells your own personal story. It's a memoir, and it talks about your family life here in America and how you learned about that family life from being among the Sami in Norway.
Yes.
What did you learn about, you know, you had some unresolved tragedies. Your mother died young, sister as well. What did you learn about those experiences from your time in Norway?
It's a great question. And I feel like what I learned, so my family background, which is really half of this memoir, goes yes. back and forth, because I really needed to explain my childhood in order to have readers better understand why I would make such a big sweeping decision to go stay in the Arctic. And what I found in the Arctic was solitude and time for reflection. And what I realized is that I had a very difficult childhood with a lot of loss. My mother died when I was small, then my only sister, birth sister, died when I was small. Not an easy growing up life. I always felt like an alien and I didn't belong anywhere. But what I realized in reflecting on my life is that I had been so lucky my entire life for all of the different people that had stepped in that may not have been blood relations to me, but people that were tremendous champions in my life. And this is from women that I worked at a Supercuts with in my first job that I've kept in touch with for 30 years. To, you know, mentors that I had at work towards, and also everybody in this village that quietly stepped out of the shadows to help me integrate into the village and, you know, make me part of the community. So that's really what I realized. And I think that's the great thing about writing a memoir. I think everybody should do it because you see things that you wouldn't normally see.
Eventually you decided, it was 6 years in the Arctic tundra. What made you decide to come back? I know you're in England now, but come back to the West.
I started to realize that that my time there had been really wonderful and I loved it. But in terms of a longer term, sort of building a life for myself and being with a partner and, you know, working, that I probably needed to be in a bigger city. So I had thought about that move quite a lot. And I was doing a lot of projects coming back and forth to England, actually, in my last year and a half in the north. And so I took the decision to move, actually, inspired by, I met my partner, and we, you know, he had been coming up to the Arctic from England for about a year. And that's a long way to travel to meet someone. That is really ultra long distance dating. So I eventually was the one that made the, you know, after a couple of years, decided that I would come to England. And so I actually drove in my car from the Arctic to England with my two reindeer herding dogs, my two rescue cats from New York City, and we crossed the continent.
Yeah. Do you ever go back to Kautokeino, or is that portion of your life over?
I don't think it's over. I would love to have a place there at some point. Unfortunately, the pandemic really stopped me, as it stopped everybody, I think, from traveling and connecting with people. I haven't been there ever since the pandemic started, just impossible with travel restrictions. But I think all the time that it would be nice to, you know, have a regular connection to that part of the world. And these were lifelong friendships that I made. And even though I did break up with the reindeer herder, we ended up being friends because I realized what a stretch it was for him to date someone outside of his own culture. And so that has ended up being a tremendous friendship as well.
You know, before you moved to Norway, you were living a very hectic life. You know, you're living in New York City, you're consulting for major, major companies, marketing and communication strategy. You know, you're probably on the go, probably 18 hours a day. Mm-hmm. You go to Norway and you obviously have this immense slowdown. How has that time in Norway now informed your life now that you're in England as far as how you take time for things, how you navigate life and work?
It's a great question. And I think I would say in the day-to-day, I just think being in nature is so important. I've never been somebody that was, you know, could meditate or do all of this, but just being in nature, I see that as so essential to well-being now, especially for me. And I just care less about things, you know. I just lived without a lot of things for a long time, and so I don't have the same sort of desires that I had previously, I would say. But nature is the big one.
Yeah. I do have to ask one more question, if you would just indulge
sure.
me. You recount several episodes in the book where, you know, a neighbor comes to visit, you say hello, and you sit in silence. You recount conversations where you're trying to help the university, the Sammy sort of university there, help in their marketing, and you're proposing things to a Russian Sammy who is just staring at you impassively. And we as Americans, you know, we abhor silence. You know, it's just a vacuum that just sucks everything out. But obviously, this culture is very at peace with silence. Did you ever get a sense of what is at the heart of that silence? Are they thinking? Are they processing what they're seeing? Are they sort of just utterly at peace, or what exactly?
I think it's a more thorough contemplation, actually. But also, I will add one thing to that culturally, something that was so shocking to me, which is not Sami, but it is Norwegian, and I write about it in my book. And I would say actually it's very Scandinavian. It's this idea of not sticking out, and so being part of the group as opposed to one person. And you have to imagine, I lived in New York, and you know, you are a go-getter. If you have to assert yourself, and this is just completely not the way that you do things in Norway. And it took me 3 years. You know, if you had bad customer service or something like that, in America, we would say, get me the manager. I want to speak to the manager. And if you do something like that in Norway, I read this hilarious book in an airport that said that a Norwegian knows that you are either foreign or crazy or both if you do that.
It's a very interesting read, and the name of the book is Dalvi, 6 Years in the Arctic Tundra. Laura, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Laura Galway is a writer and communication strategist now working out of the United Kingdom. Her book is titled Dalvi, 6 Years in the Arctic Tundra. It's published by Allen and Unwin. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.